You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE is closed for the second day of the trading week, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And this day we have Nick Kunzer, who's a guest presenter, and he's from Sanlam Private Wealth, and also David Shapiro, as always on a Tuesday, who's the deputy chairman of Sasfin Securities. And David, I might start with you actually, because a set of results came out today from a company called Sasfin, and I spoke to a chap called Ian Cruikshanks earlier on today, and he was actually quite impressed, having gone to the presentation, and he saw you there, I think, and he said, "This is a good company." Do you agree with him?
Well, look, they've been around for a long time, and I think coming off a very low base, I think last year was a very difficult year, and I still think things are still difficult for all kinds of banks. But I think what's good with them is that they've turned it around. I think they managed to stem some of the losses. By losses, I mean these were credit losses last year. Didn't appear there, and slowly the revenue's been turning around, and the company's being placed in the right kind of position. But to put it blankly, you need good markets. You need to push up the revenue line, and I think that's going to be the challenge for Michael Sassoon, who's now the CEO, into the coming year. You know, I think also the fact that they reduced their dividend from 40% of profits to 20%. You know, normally they would pay out 40%. They're paying out 20%. And this has always been a dividend payer. It just shows you how tough conditions are. And I think that's to conserve cash for future investment and also to steady the balance sheet. So, and look, the share price is not going to do anything. I think it's going to hover around here until we see a change. But it's hard for me. I am an insider. By insider, I mean, I work for the firm. I don't know anything about, I know what I do. But, it's a steady result. It's a good, solid number.
Nick Kunzer, you were from Sanlam Private Wealth. When you have a look at these niche financial services players, and there were a proliferation of them in the late 1990s until the 2000 crash, of course, and then a lot of them fell by the wayside. I was working for one of them called Greenwich, the Greenwich Group. When you have a look at something like Sasfin, well, first of all, do you look at something like Sasfin? And secondly, if you do look at it, what is your impression?
So it's on the radar, but you're right. You know, this is, I'm sure David attested well. I mean, the regulations and the rules of engagement in a financial services firm now, with all these Basel ones and Basel twos and tiers and everything else, and capital adequacy that's required to run these firms now, is becoming more and more onerous and more expensive. So in order for you to run a successful financial service firm with a decent offering of product is very expensive from a regulatory point of view. I mean, you have to have I don't even know how many compliance officers SASFIN must have for something of its size. I know how many we have, and it's a big cost to the bottom line. So yes, there's a place for them, and it's definitely a place for these niches. And you look at something like SASFIN, I mean, as David said, it wasn't a bad set of results, and the stock is pretty much flat year to date. But, I mean, like most other firms in this space, they're going to be at liberty to what the financial markets do, unfortunately. And if you look at what Sasfin's done, it's exactly unchanged year to date. I guess that sums up what these markets have done in South Africa.
What I like about Sasfin, though, sorry to interrupt, is that it has a focus on small and medium enterprises. And I don't think the big banks, I mean, if you're an SME and you go into one of the big four, or let's call it the big four, they're going to look at you and say, I'm sorry, you've got to have this, 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 and this. But I get the impression, from speaking to Ian Cruikshanks earlier, that there's a different attitude at Sasfin, David.
Yeah, it is. I think they're very close to their clients. They help them through difficult operations. And I think the relationship is perhaps much tighter than with a normal bank. And they don't have to add many clients. They just have to add quality clients, you know, even if they are small and medium-sized. And I think this is where, this is where they're focusing on. I have to agree, but Lindsay, you know, it comes back to a point that Nick made, which is very relevant, and it applies to most businesses. There's no shortcuts around the compliance or IT issues. So, in other words, that means that the smaller you are, the more these costs take away from your bottom line, and the more you need to kind of grow and get the, to get the size in order to offset these kind of costs. So Nick's made a very, very valid point in that. We still have to have compliance officers, no matter how small you are. You still have to, and those regulatory costs just make it very difficult.
I heard, just touching on that, I heard Jamie Dimon speaking recently about the cost of regulation running his bank, which is an absolute monster size. I mean, I think it's the biggest bank in the world now. But he was saying he was sort of complaining about the compliance and the regulation that they have, the hoops they have to jump through in the US. And he was saying it's like running a restaurant where you can imagine that one-fifth of your profits, not your costs, one-fifth of your profits, 20%, have to go to, say, like tasting the food to make sure it's right when it comes out the kitchen. And you say, like, you try to run a profitable business with that much cost going into compliance and regulation. It's very difficult.
I think it's a lovely subject because I think talking to Roland, who started, that's Michael's father, Lindsay, you know, just when he retired, And in a private chat, and I don't think what he said to me is confidential, but he made a point when he started the bank. I mean, the family goes back years ago. I can't remember the full history, but it wasn't really. It was more a trading company rather than a finance company or a forwarding company, clearing company. You know, that came much later. But he said that, you know, in those days it was much easier. Today, you need to be compliant. You need to understand technology. There's so much more that you have to do. And I think he'd reached a level, you know, reached a stage where he's in his, I think about 73, 74 thereabouts. He said, okay, it's enough, you know, let me hand over. You know what I mean? For me, an old man like this, I'm not sure I can handle all of this demands and that. I want to have the fun side of it, you know. I think we all want the fun side of the business. But today, you got to be in touch with, these demands.
It's almost a parallel to someone that might have been a traditional miner, a gold miner, an iron ore miner, a copper miner, and now suddenly black economic empowerment regulations have to be adhered to, which are a good thing, but can be onerous, as the word Nick used earlier on, onerous. And people might throw their hands up and say, well, you know what, I'll leave it to the new people, the accountants, the bean counters. Wouldn't you say?
Mm. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, that's it. I had fun. I've done my good. I've had a lot of fun now, but this is too much for me.
Okay, what about fun in the airline business? Comair, I'm going through the Stock Exchange news service announcements, and Nick Kunzer, Comair was up about 12% on the opening. It closed up, or it is going to close up around about 5%, and it's all to do with some sort of settlements, and so that's a once-off. I wouldn't be in the airline business, would you?
No, and I think, everyone knows the expression Warren Buffett feels about the airline businesses. They've never made a profit, but Comair did have a profit. You know, declared a profit and was quite, I guess, a challenging year. They even, heaven forbid, they're even paying a dividend. So it's actually not a bad business. I mean, they increased their HEPS up by 184%, I think it was. So on the face of it, not a bad set of numbers in a very difficult business. Difficult business. But that wasn't bad. As I said, they actually produced a profit, which is, I mean, if you were someone like SAA or the the government looking at these results thinking, why can't SAA do this? So I kind of got to hold your head up for them. They actually don't care.
Where do you fly, David, when you fly around South Africa? Do you fly SAA or Comair?
Anyone that's depends. Both of them. I like Comair. No, I think it's a very good airline. It's British Airways, so it's operating at four British Airways. So there's it's a very good airline. I'm not what happens is I think that where you have the oil price going up and down, where you have the rand all over the place, where you have an economy here that's not growing. I think it makes it very difficult. I'm on Nick's side, and in this respect, I think the fact that they're well run doesn't take the fact that they're well run just doesn't detract from the underlying conditions. Mm. There's something there. The actual operating profit was down quite significantly, down from about 670 million down to about 283 million. And, you know, a lot of that is impairment of goodwill, I see, which is a non-cash item in that. But down the line, there were, still a lot of issues on the operating side. So I don't know what that impairment of goodwill is. I've yet to go through the results. It's not something I would normally go through, but I'm just flipping through as you're talking here.
Yeah, there was a 14-year-old court case or 15-year-old court case that was over R1 billion with, I think, with interest as well, which helped upset. But yes, it's operating in a very difficult environment. And I think besides that sort of one-off, it might not have been so.
Let's have a look at this one now, because this morning, and I can't find it, it's almost as though that the Stock Exchange News Service has deleted something that came out at 9:30 this morning about Blue Telecom. It did say they haven't come up with their results on time, and if they don't do so by the 30th of September, the share will be suspended. And now I'm looking at something else here, and it says here confirmation of annual results release date. So the Stock Exchange News Service, I think, has deleted what it put out at 9:30 this morning. But Blue Label Telecoms has said that it will come out with its results and everything will be fine. But when a company doesn't come out with its results, David Shapiro, you've always got to say to yourself, wait a second, something's going on here.
Yeah, you see, they are marked, in other words, violation of listing requirements. So if you look at the stock, there is a marker on the share price, you know, that the listing requirements require 3 months. They haven't come out for 3 months. But what they did is that, and this is what I couldn't understand at the time, and I criticized the stock exchange at the time, because they came out and they said, we're in the process of negotiating a deal. They didn't give details. This is Blue.
Yes.
And therefore we're requesting that we delay our results until the end of where we're now, the end of September. They're going to meet that, but I don't think they've done the deal. And in any case, from an understanding point of view, I'm saying, hold on a sec. At the 31st of May, were they solvent or not? Or was the underlying investment solvent or not, being Cell C? You know, you can't say, oh, we're doing a deal now, which in hindsight would have altered that value, you know. And without giving details of the deal, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
31st of May, you sign off the account. How are we now? What do we look like now? You can't say, oh, we're going to do a deal there that would alter it and kind of...
As a publicly listed company, I mean, you have an obligation when investors and traders, whoever else, want to buy or sell a share, all the information available to make the decision has got to be made available publicly. And David is exactly right. I mean, it doesn't sound like all that information was available at the time.
And even now they said the results are going to come out, but they've given us no clue. All they've come out recently and saying we're still in negotiations with MTN over a deal, over a, what do you call it, a sharing, you know, with a, oh, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but I mean a roaming deal. So, you know, where I think they're really going to rent space from MTN. I'm trying to put it in layman's words, but we haven't got details on it, and nor have we got details of the so-called buffet consortium who was supposed to do some kind of deal.
Yeah,
I know. So nothing's come out. So I don't know what the eventual results are going to show. But that's next week. Where are we now? The 19th?
September the 26th. What is that? Next week, Thursday, supposedly. But yeah, these investor relations at Blue Label need a little bit of a kick. Because it hasn't
I know.
Yes, maybe that's an opportunity for me. Dollar Rand, 14.74. British pound against the Rand, 18.40. And the Euro Rand is 16.29, with the Euro dollar 110.56. The dollar weakening, the Euro strengthening by around about 0.5%, which is actually quite a big move. And let's see what that's done to the gold price and the rest of the commodities. The gold price is up 5 to $1,503.5 per ounce. The platinum price is $9.42, which is up 4. And Brent crude oil, somebody, and maybe you, Nick, can give me the Brent crude oil price, because my ShareNet screen has not updated since yesterday. So give me Brent crude, please, the latest price.
So I don't have Brent, but I'll look at West Texas, the front month future, which we trade. So that is down 5.31% at $59.56. So that is the West Texas tradable.
And that was $63 this morning. So that's a big move.
So let me, I've actually got Brent. Give me 1 sec. Look here. Yeah, it's also down. I'll tell you now.
Yeah.
So we have, it looks like Brent is trading, the front month contract is trading at $65.40, down 6%.
Which is interesting. And of course, David, I was talking yesterday morning and I heard all these stats on CNN. The price was up 15 to 20%. In fact, 20% at one stage in the Far East in thin conditions when that news first came out of the attacks, which incidentally are not drones, by the way. They are missiles that came from Iran, apparently, but the market has shrugged that off. And suddenly, we've got a market that has come back because there are 800 million barrels or something, or is it 200? Anyway, there's hundreds of millions of barrels of oil in strategic reserves, not just in the United States, but also Aramco has them. And in a place very close to where I am now, in Amsterdam, they've got facilities there. So if they need to turn on the spigots, they can do, David. So
yeah, also, sorry to jump in there, David. Also, there is rumor out, there's a news conference supposedly for later on this evening out of London, which the Saudi Arabians are hosting, saying that the leaks that have been coming out in the last sort of half an hour or so have been that they're going to be up to capacity again within the next 2 to 3 weeks, which is either they have the best engineers in the world, they can rebuild everything in the space of a few days, but this is just here. So sorry, David, you can carry on.
No, you're right. That is the story, that they'll be back up and running. And I think what Lindsay said is correct. There's a huge glut of oil around, and I think if the price goes up, of course the Americans start fracking again, and more output comes. So we've seen the run up. We saw the knee jerk reaction. I think what's relevant as well is that I don't think this is brimming over to be a crisis. If you look at the gold price at 1505, it's slightly better.
And treasury yields and that have hardly budged in the last 2 days. Budged.
In fact, if you look at U.S. markets, they're picking up slightly. They're stabilizing now.
Yeah, S&P is actually up 2 points at the moment.
Is it? Yeah, I'm just looking now. But yes, you're dead right. Up, it's just hovering around 3,000. So there's no panic in the markets at all. Some good numbers came out of the U.S. on industrial production, which were better than expected. So I think also there's a little bit of positioning ahead of the Fed tomorrow. So overall, all we're trying to point out is that there's no panic in markets over this incident at all.
And it's funny that all this, this was front and center of the news, there's all sorts of WhatsApps doing the rounds of my groups on like the Saturday and the Sunday, and where's oil going to open on Monday? And people sort of, it's almost like forgetting the fact that we have a Fed meeting tomorrow, which I think is a very important meeting, given what the ECB did last week. So you're right, maybe a little bit of positioning ahead of what could be a very important day.
Just carry on with that Fed talk and also the central bank talk, Nick, because you set the scene on Monday morning with myself and Greg Davies, and you talked about this is going to be the week of central banks. What do you think? Do you think that the US Federal Reserve will bow to the pressure of Mario Draghi and Donald Trump, or do you think they will independent?
Well, it's been very interesting. Like, I'm not an economist, but to look at the sort of numbers and the data, and David alluded to some good US numbers today as well on the manufacturing side. So last week we had the ECB sort of doing QE98, whatever it is, throwing the towel at the final throw of the dice. Now this week we've got a lot of central banks. Of course, don't forget our own SARB is meeting on Thursday too. But the Fed tomorrow being the big point. Now, the out of nowhere, everyone is expecting a 90-95%, I think, Fed, if you look at what their possibility of rates, there's an index you can look at, and there was a 95% possibility of them cutting 25 basis points tomorrow. And in fact, there's a small percentage of people who think it's going to be 50 basis points. And if you're Donald Trump, you believe it's going to be 2%. But but out of nowhere, all of a sudden it's gone from 95 to about 75%, which is quite a significant move, because in the last couple of days, out of nowhere, we've had this little sniff of inflation. All of a sudden, things are looking like inflation is ticking up, which was nowhere to be seen anyway. And maybe, just maybe, there might be the Fed saying, you know, Mr. Powell wants to keep a little bit of independence here. So just the risk is starting to get elevated going into tomorrow. But no, we've seen the equity prices. I mean, we've been unchanged for 2 days.
I don't think Jay Powell's brave enough. I think he's.
Shame. He's been bashed for like 6 months.
So. I mean, to be called boneheads and insult there.
But correct me if I'm wrong. I was asking someone today, did Donald Trump not appoint him?
Yes, he did.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
And he comes out and said, well, how do we get this bonehead? And someone said, well, didn't you appoint him?
But I don't think he's brave enough not to reduce rates. And I think, to be fair, he has to also act ahead. And I think there are signs that the global economy is slowing down. If you look at China, if you look at Europe, I think
this morning as well, we had some soft numbers out of Singapore as well. So, I mean, globally, yes, you're right. Globally, the world does seem to be slowing a bit and maybe needs to be a bit preemptive as a Fed.
So I think he'll be influenced by that, even though the US economy is going along the right track. So, it'll be another 0.25% and, Trump will come out and blast him for not doing, as you said, 2% and taking that down to zero. But poor old Jay Powell. I mean, I don't think they've ever gone through this. I can't.
What do you mean, poor old Jay Powell? All he has to do is meet once every 2 months and say up or down. It's very simple, and he gets paid a fortune for it. He's probably on around about $850,000 a year or something.
Am I right in assuming tomorrow is not live? There is no press.
That is live.
Is it live?
I think he does go live, yeah.
I think
that's right, yeah.
Well, hopefully he'll get a new tie or something. And gentlemen, let's have a look at on sharenet.co.za, the most viewed shares today. Sassel was 307 at 9 o'clock this morning. Closed at, I think, just about 291, down 5%. Steinhoff up 3.6%. We don't need to worry about that. Sibanye up 6.7%. And Naspers down 2.2%. And now if I look at the top five major movers. Nick, I'll come to you on this one. I've got Sibanye up 6.7%. Implats,
that's right.
4% higher. Sokosan up 3.5%. Anglo Gold Ashanti, 3.2% to the good. And Harmony up 2.6%. I won't make any comments about David Shapiro's attitude toward gold shares because he's getting bored with me doing that. But it seems to me that the gold shares got a little bit beaten up and maybe they're leading the gold price higher over the next few days. What do you think, Nick, and gold shares?
Possibly
please.
A little, possibly, yes. So possibly coming in, as we said, there's a bit of risk coming in the next few days. And there's a little bit of risk aversion coming in gold shares, which have done nothing for the last, up until the last couple of months. It hasn't been the go-to risk-off trade that we used to. But now showing a little bit of life as people get a bit nervous. And AngloGold Ashanti, yes, that AngloGold Ashanti 290, bearing in mind it's off 30, 35 odd rand from its recent highs. And Harmony, so maybe a little bit of bottom picking there. And the one for me, though, is also Impala Platinum. I mean, it's everyone's saying that it's overvalued and it's run too hard and this and that, but it just keeps on going with stock. I mean, up another 4% today and on decent volumes every day. So that's sort of caught a lot of people, that one.
October 2018, which is almost a year ago. It's almost as a, I think it was 2 or 3 months ago because I've been commenting upon it, but it was 16 Rand 20 per share, David Shapiro. 16 to 90. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing performance. If you can catch that sort of run, you don't need to do anything else. You just come in the morning, send out your statements to your customers, and then go on holiday.
It was so easy.
It's so easy.
They had to work hard to turn the mine around. I think
they were on
the brink of bankruptcy. Things were really tough for them.
Yeah, I think they're reaping the benefit of some very tough decisions they had to make that people forget about.
Credit to them and to Anglo Platts as well. And I think from Neil Froneman's point of view, I think the palladium price, and I think we forget that palladium has been one of the big drivers of the turnaround in parlors of Anglo Platts and
rhodium as well.
Rhodium as well. So I think, you know, when you put the basket together and you get that kind of run, it's helped them as well as the weaker rand. But don't take anything away from management. They also had to, a lot of credit to them for doing what they've done. Chris Griffiths, particularly at Anglo Platts. I'm trying to get my words right. I think we've seen probably the best in gold. The fact that it didn't run now is for me a bit of a worry, that we didn't see on this kind of crisis a big run in the gold prices. Getting, you know, it's starting to worry me a bit. So I, having seen the run and having witnessed it, I'm not inclined to be a bull on either gold or Impala, platinum shares. And when I say I'm not a bull, I don't get involved in it, but I do watch it on a day-to-day basis and monitor it. I would think that perhaps the next moves are going to be down in these stocks.
I'm going to have a private bet with you on that once we've concluded this interview. On the downside today on the JSE, SAPI down 6.6%, RMIH down 5.25%, let's call it. ARM, African Rainbow Minerals, down 5% and a bit. Sasol down 5%, and AVI down 4.6%. Any comments there from either of you gentlemen on those stocks?
Well, I couldn't understand why the market ran like it did yesterday. I can't understand why it's done a reverse and gone the other way today, because it seems to be a complete reversal of what we saw yesterday, where we saw some staggering gains in consumer shares, food shares,
banks.
You know, consumer being banks, retail. And then all of a sudden today, the complete opposite, a total wipeout. So, Nick, you know, you might be closer. You've got more people working on desks that are trading. I have absolutely no idea drove it up and what drove it down.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost take a spreadsheet of yesterday's big moves in the last 2 hours from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and those exactly same shares, as you were saying, exactly the same shares are the big movers down on the day today. Mm. I mean, there were some rumors of some funds that needed to sort of up their weighting in South Africa, but I mean, these are always just rumors and that. But you're right. I mean, I can't even how Absa moved 5% yesterday, how Spar Group moved 5% yesterday off nothing. It just, I guess it also just shows how nervous and how volatile. Volatility has been the theme, I guess, for the last few months. It looks like it's going to be for the rest of the year as well, given the last few days anyway.
Nick, just give us the closing prices of the major JSE indices, please, before we get to David's shock or story of the day. So indices first, please, you.
Okay, so I'm not sure which way Greg runs through them, but the financials were down 2.42%. We look at, we said the top 40 tradable down 1.79%. The all shares, you said, 1.66% down. Industrials were weaker by 1.36%, healthcare by 1.9%. Technology also down 2.14%, and of course, as we were talking about the banks, the big loser on the day, the financial index down 3.1%.
What was the volume?
I didn't see the volume, David. Did you see it?
Yeah, 27.5 billion.
That's
and
big.
What's interesting, it is big, but once again, 30% of that in Naspers and Prosus. Mm-hmm. 5 billion, and I'm rounding these up. 5 billion in Naspers, 3 billion in Prosus, and making up a huge amount of shares. Both of those shares are actually clobbered today. And what's interesting with Prosus is that it's coming back now closer to the 100 rand or 110 that we thought it would be listed at, around about 112, if I'm not mistaken. 112, yeah, round about there. And remember, this opened last week at 120. So we've seen quite a big pullback.
What is your shock or story of the day, please, David Shapiro?
I think the big story is AB InBev, you know, going ahead with the listing of its Asian Pacific business, raising about half of what we thought it would raise. Remember, before it sold its Australian operations, we thought it would raise about 10 billion or thereabouts on the sale of this or the IPO of its Asian business. But it's going to raise about half of that. The share up 1.5% today. The thing, Lindsay, what's interesting is the discussion about what they're going to do with that money. Now, there's a lot of thoughts that they were going to use it for debt, but talk now is that they might use it for further acquisition. So anyway, the share up 1.5%. We're not sure what they're going to do, you know, with the money, but
I wonder what they can acquire.
Going ahead.
What can they acquire?
I don't know.
Another sort of one of those silly little garage breweries that people have these days?
Possibly.
What is there anymore? I don't know.
In Asia Pacific, there might be something that they want. I don't know. But just picking up talk. Nevertheless, the share's up about 1.5% today.
Nick, before I give you my quote of the day, what are you looking at for the rest of the week? I think it must be central banks.
Yeah, all about the central banks. And amongst all the noise, don't forget our South African Reserve Bank out on Thursday as well. I mean, no change is expected from our SARB, who are generally quite hawkish. And they're probably almost certain to sit pat, given the backdrop of a weak economy still and divisions with the government, etc. So that's obviously our local stuff. And, of course, the big number tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, that is the Fed. And as David has alluded to, probably a live meeting, so a press conference afterwards. So those two, by far, are going to dominate news flow in the next 2 days.
My quote of the day is from Clint Eastwood, because this is my Western theme for the last week, and maybe we'll go on for another week as well. He said the following in a book called Why We Love Westerns. He says, "There's a rebel lying deep in my soul. Anytime anybody tells me the trend is such and such, I go in the opposite direction. I hate the idea. I hate the idea of trends. I hate imitation. I have a reverence for individuality." Maybe some of you asset managers should have a listen to that. David Shapiro is the deputy chairman of Sasfin Securities, and Sasfin results were out today. Have a look at them on the Stock Exchange News Service. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.